When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
Tony Football Show. Today, Interstellar, the Nerazzurri, visit their neighbours to celebrate their second star. Classico, there's Madrid's latest Vasquez masterpiece. We hail German co-efficiency, salute PSG for their Lyon win, and say bonjour tristesse at Vitesse with their 18-point penalty. All that and more in this Totally Football Show. Crazy Inter, love them. Woohoo! Yeah, wise words on this Tuesday, the 23rd of April, with the Nerazzurri freshly conquering their 20th title.
Well done to them, the second star.
At San Siro.
Intergalactic.
Very nice. Very nice. And you know who was there?
James Horncastle?
Yeah, that's true.
Also, and
Noel Gallagher?
Yeah, Noel Gallagher.
Slightly randomly.
Yeah.
Probably loads of other people as well, to be fair, you'd think.
Was it a full stadium?
Yeah.
Right.
So, not sure where James is at the moment. It's a very much a skeleton crew listener, because there's me and Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James.
And Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
Alvaro's off somewhere, possibly on a barge, not sure.
Yeah, celebrating.
But we'll be hearing from him very shortly. Okay. And we've got fingers crossed for Horncastle, but he's trying to negotiate transport issues on his way back from Milan. So we'll see how that goes. Hey, celebrations for Inter Monday, but celebrations too for Julien Laurens and the mini Laurenses.
Oh, yes.
Last
that was
week.
Really heartwarming to see.
Oh, thank you, boys. Thank you.
So you went to the Montjuic Olympic Stadium to see a delicately poised match between Barcelona and PSG, and you took your young'uns, or two of them.
Quite two of the children. Huh? Yeah, it was school holidays.
The mental scars. And imagine what that would have been like.
I did say to them when we landed in Barcelona, I said, listen, boys, regardless of what happens, whatever happens tonight.
Yeah, don't tell your mother.
Yeah, what happens in Barcelona stays in Barcelona. We'll still be happy even if PSG get knocked out, you know, if the scenario is dramatic, like too often. So I tried to prepare them for it.
And for the first, well, until the Araujo red, were you slightly concerned, Jules?
So the PSG started really well, I thought, until the goal is Lamine Yamal, and then Rafinha is a little bit lucky in the way he scores. But PSG were, I thought, looking good. Mm. And after that, I kind of said to them both, like, okay, well, this is, let's enjoy the atmosphere, because the atmosphere was great.
Yeah.
We've never been to the stadium together. Let's just enjoy it. And then the Araujo red card happened, and then I could feel them believing again, and then after that, it was really amazing for them to be there, and at the end, a big group of PSG ultras kind of walked past them, and they had their shirt on, and everybody like high-fived them and checked them, and there was the middle one especially is tiny, and all those big PSG ultras all high-fiving him and checking him, he was loving it. So it was amazing night. Yeah, they hardly slept that night; they were so buzzing.
Was that your moment of the week, Joe?
Well, I didn't know if that counted because that was last. It was.
You can have another one if you want.
Well, I was going to pick a great goal that we had in Ligue 1 for Marseille.
Is it the Marseille? Yeah.
Yeah, for Faris Moumbagna, who scored an overhead kick.
Yeah. On le retourné! On le retourné! De Faris Moumbagna!
Quel but sensationnel! Le retourné acrobatique au niveau du point de penalty. Il est mythique ce but de l'Olympique de Marseille.
Not the most spectacular Cristiano Ronaldo-esque or Garnacho-esque one, but still a very nice one to get a point for Marseille 2-2 after their heroics against Benfica on Thursday in the Europa League. He touched the ball 12 times before that and was pretty bad. And the 13th touch in that game got a wonderful goal. So
yeah, as overhead kicks go, it was quite agricultural, I felt.
Yeah, so do you know the Joao Felix one for Barcelona the other day?
Yeah.
It was a similar one. So you don't jump too high in the air.
No, you more fall over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that one. But it's still over your head, so it's still technically overhead still kick, can. So it counts. Yeah. But a big goal for them.
Very, very nice. Rafa, I imagine that this week you're spoilt for choice.
Always, James. Mm. Always spot for choice in the Bundesliga and German football. But I think it has to be Josip Stanisic.
Stanisic macht das 1-1.
97th minute.
Yeah.
I mean, Leverkusen didn't really have a lot to play for in this game, apart from this unbeaten record and staying in the groove and so on. And it just kept pushing and pushing and pushing.
So when you say this game, there they are. They're at Dortmund away in this tough stadium. And they go behind with, what, 7-8 minutes to go in the 90?
Yeah.
And they have a couple of chances. And as you say, there's nothing really for them to play for. And they've only had 2 days rest since their Europa League match. And yet, 98th minute.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Incredible. It's ridiculous, this team.
Yeah.
I don't know how many late goals they've had.
I can tell you.
15, isn't it?
Well, this was the 20th goal that they've scored after the 86th minute this season. In Europe, I think their last 5 goals have all come after the 85th or some moment like that. In the 20 matches since the Bundesliga returned from the winter break, they have scored 11 goals after the 90 and another 6 after the 81st minute. So it's just insane. And you would say that it's unsustainable, but clearly it isn't.
I mean, I think they're getting a lot of breaks that might not come again next season, but they have this unbelievable self-assuredness, confidence in their own.
They must be fit playing as well.
Hmm?
They must be really fit.
They must be fit as well, yeah. But I think their playing style, because a lot of it is based on small passes and movement, you move a lot without actually feeling it so much.
Mm.
I think it's probably easier to play than if you had to run a lot without the ball.
Yeah, that's true.
Push really high because you need to win the ball back. They dominate. They grind teams down.
Mm.
Against West Ham in the first half, by the way, it was their worst performance of the season probably. Yeah. And it could have easily got knocked out. But then they came back and eventually they found the goal just as they did in Dortmund.
You know the crazy thing about the Stanisic goal? It comes from a corner. The corner comes from a free kick by Grimaldo. That is going wide. And I think Kobel can let the ball go and it will go wide. It's a goal kick and Dortmund clear it and then Dortmund win. And I don't know if Kobel just wants to make sure the ball is not coming back in maybe. I don't know. But it's going wide, so he doesn't really need to put it out for a corner and then on the corner, the score.
When the planets line up for you. Who have they got next, Rafa?
Stuttgart at home.
That's game number 46.
It's a tough game for Stuttgart, third best team in the league. They lost this weekend.
Stuttgart,
yes, but they are formidable opposition. And with the Roma semi-final looming large, it'd be another test of their mentality and durability.
It's one of the last games they actually lost a year ago, the first leg against Roma. A potential moment of the week from a German point of view, I thought, was Mats Hummels.
Happy harvesting.
Yeah, fellow farmers.
Dear fellow farmers.
Yeah.
It's funny. I think my view is that if you're associated with the Bundesliga German football, you shouldn't even react to this kind of stupid discourse. But I would not begrudge him a bit of Schadenfreude.
There you go.
Yeah.
So,
I think it's a bit of a one-off, to be honest.
Really? Two teams in the Champions League semi-finals?
No,
more that England team don't have any. There's no more that way.
The difference between England 0, Germany 2, or 3 if you count the Europa League and Leverkusen. It doesn't change anything about the financial situation,
about
the dynamics of the Premier League having 3 or 4 teams that can win the title. Okay, you can say in the Bundesliga things have evened up, but it is a bit of an outlier this year.
Mm.
And
but that's the magic of sport, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why not? Why not enjoy the moment in the sunshine?
Indeed so.
If there was any sun.
Okay. Alvaro Romeo is going to be with us later on, but here, a little advanced taster, is Alvaro with his moment of the week.
Well, my moment of the week is Girona qualifying for Europe for the first time in their history. Has to be. They beat Cadiz, 4-1, and they beat them in style, and they will play a European tournament for the first time in their 94-year history. At worst, Girona will play the Europa League. At best, the Champions League, which is in their hand, by the way, because Girona only needs 9 points out of the remaining 18 to qualify for the Champions League. And Girona has been excellent this season, and they were at their entertaining best on Saturday, beating Cadiz with a lovely goal from Artem Dobik, another one from Porto that I did like, and a lovely assist, backheel assist, by Miguel Gutiérrez to Joan Martín. So, you know, congratulations to them. They are a very attacking side. They have scored already 67 goals, and they are honoring La Liga, I think. So congratulations to them, because they will play for the first time in Europe the next season.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Lautaro Martinez. Sono le 22 e 43 minuti del 22 aprile del 2024. L'Inter è campione d'Italia per la ventesima volta nel corso.
James on a plane. It's Horncastle joining us on the Zoom now, listener. Not sure how long we got him for, because he's literally sat in his seat ready for takeoff. James.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, snakes on a plane, if you want to go with the Michonne Inter spirit animal, which is the basilisk.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Well, so you were there at San Siro yesterday, hence your kind of transport issues this morning. Tell us all about the big night for Inter.
Yeah, it was a great occasion, as you can imagine, James, having gone to lots of these, because this felt like a mythical derby, really, because no one has ever had the opportunity to win the league or something in this fixture before. And for it to also be Inter's 20th Scudetto, and for them to get their second star, the Seconda Stella, boy, did they rub it in, and boy, did the Milan ultras also want to make out that it didn't really matter to them. And that Inter had got their mathematics wrong, because ultimately they had one of those league titles was given to them by the Calciopoli Tribunal. So
right.
For Milan fans and Juventus fans, they're still on 19.
That was maybe the one victory for Milan of the evening, the banner that they put up prior to the game with the Juve symbol in Nerazzurri colours saying, "You have become what you despise." What did they mean, James?
Well, they meant that the new Champions League finals, as we saw in Istanbul. I mean, the accusation that they steal championships, I suppose, there was a feeling that it was unfair that Inter were given the title in 2006 by this tribunal. And there's also been this assumption that over the last year, they've got a few refereeing decisions that have gone their way. Yeah, they call Serie A the Marotta League, Marotta being the chief executive of Inter, who sits on the board or the councils of the Italian Football Federation and Serie A. Mm. I mean, a lot of this is just baseless. But it all plays into Spoto, the kind of banter, the rivalry.
Marotta, of course, was the man previously at Juventus. And much like a grand old Juventus, they also have a Turam in their side, which is one of Marotta's big achievements for this season, certainly.
Yeah, I would say he's probably their best, one of Marotta's best free transfers. And he's got quite the list, because you go back to signing Andrea Pirlo of the Juventus from AC Milan, which was the hinge on which the balance of power swung in Italy back in 2011-12. And then he signed Paul Pogba for free, who then sold for 110 million. But Thuram is right up there. And for him to have, 21 goal involvements for him to score last night, was brilliant. I think, to be honest, his injury that he picked up in the first leg against Atletico was pretty decisive, because to lose him at halftime in that first leg, I think with him on the pitch, with a fully fit, they maybe score two or three goals. Arnautovic doesn't come on and miss chances. And he was a bit half fit for the second leg. So he's just been a great signing for them. As is Jan Sommer at the other end. Yeah, Sommer made some big saves last night. Broke the clean sheet record. I think a lot of Inter fans were a bit upset that Onana, who became such a fan favourite last year, left after only one season. So So yeah, Madot has done a great job in terms of rebuilding a team that has had to sell players over the last 3 years because of the club, well, the financial issues that the owner has been under.
So Marotta's done an outstanding job. Inzaghi, we've talked about his incredible tactical innovations and flexibility. Who else would you cite from this Scudetto winning side?
Calhanoglu, particularly on the basis of last night. I mean, he has reinvented himself as a number six. He's been instrumental in making this team as fluid as it is. But also, I think last night was a great personal satisfaction to him because when he left their rival, AC Milan, on a free transfer to replace Christian Eriksen at Inter, Milan then went and won the league the following season. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic, in the title celebrations, he grabbed the megaphone, a little bit like this megaphone, and said, store the Milan fans, send a message to Hakan. And they sang all these derogatory chants against him. And so last night at San Siro, there were banners saying, send a message to Zlatan Hakan. And Zlatan was the focus of a lot of the Inter celebrations at Piazza Duomo last night. They had a blow-up goal of him fixed on the front of a tractor. They said, Hakan Campione, Zlatan in Pensione. So Hakan a champion, Zlatan has been pensioned off. And they were burning Zlatan jerseys. So I think Calhanoglu, for his impact on the pitch, but also I think what he means to this rivalry as well, I definitely pick him out.
All right. What a sweet night for the Nerazzurri, winning there in the home of their rivals. That's the sixth defeat in a derby in a row for Stefano Pioli, Milan manager. He's not going to get a seventh, James.
Well, look, let's see. I mean, he is someone who's never been any hassle to the club. The club is respectful of the fact of what he did, you know, in winning the title ahead of schedule, beyond expectation, a few years ago. And, you know, he's easy to work with. I think the problem is that he's easy to beat for Inter. No coach has lost six derbies in a row. No coach has lost as many derbies. And I think when Inter are the team to beat, if you start every season like Milan do, wanting to win the championship, you need to have a coach who can set up a team in order to do that. And you saw Pioli with the last roll of the dice yesterday, play with Leao as a striker, try and mirror Inter. But if you're going to mirror this Inter team, which is one of the best in the world, then you better come correct. And, you know, again, it proved beyond them. So yeah, bit of a down note for Pioli, who didn't do a press conference last night.
Right.
I saw him walk through the mixed zone. But, you know, I think it's quite clear that the club has been exploring other options, not just recently either, but even in the winter months when things were not so great either.
James, many thanks for that update, literally from your airplane seat. What row are you in, by the way? If anyone else is on the plane, they might want to come say hello.
I mean, row six.
Right.
Work really pushed the boat out with speedy boarding.
Okay.
So
thank goodness they did.
Indeed. But yeah, I mean, you really see that Inter are internazionale. A lot of fans, not just like casual fans, but people who, you know, wearing Hoodver Nord kind of tracksuits.
Right.
And that sort of thing, flying back to London today. So yeah, big historic night in one of the great football cities of the world.
Magnificent. Well, many thanks for that then, James. Safe travels, and we'll catch up with you next week on the Totally Football Show.
Thank you, guys.
James Horncastle, literally from his aircraft seat. Who knew you could do?
I mean, it'd be crazy to try it, really.
Crazy to
but
try
it came
it.
Off.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like that before.
Some other things we should mention. Should we?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you look at the Inter team yesterday and the squad and Inzaghi and everything, and when Milan are in contrast, and even in terms of players, even in terms of quality, the manager, there's question mark over the future of Inter as the ownership base and everything, the loans, all that money involved, maybe. But on the football-wise, on the pitch, they are miles ahead of Milan. And it's not just a good transfer window in the summer that could it might bridge the gap a little bit, but his Inter side is way, way better than anybody else in Italy, really.
Yeah, and it's strange because being second best to them and reaching, say, the quarterfinals this season of the Europa League, last season the semi-finals of the Champions League, doesn't seem like that bad a result for Stefano Pioli, but there's just this feeling that the side doesn't rise to the big occasions under him, and that's why the reports are, as James was referencing, that the likes of Lopetegui and Fonseca are being talked to as potential as well. Replacements.
Hmm? Christophe Galtier, I think, is doing Milan this week.
Is that right? Yeah. Is that right? Big game, meanwhile, just before the derby in Milan, taking place in Rome on Monday afternoon when Roma took on Bologna, two teams who are vying for fourth spot. Bologna opening up a 7-point lead over the Giallorossi with a 3-1 victory. Jules, you watched this.
Yeah.
How impressed were you with Bologna?
Very impressed. But we've been impressed all season, really, by what Thiago Motta is doing.
A couple of outstanding goals.
The Salamakers one is my favourite, just for the takers, of course.
But the first one's pretty special.
Yeah, and yeah, very special too. Zirkzee scoring again, and Raf has mentioned him and James as well before on the progress that he's made under Thiago Motta and where is it now compared to the promising talent that he was earlier, maybe when we saw him at Bayern. Really great. They play slightly differently because they played a bit deeper on purpose, I think, which worked perfectly. And even without Lewis Ferguson, who's been a key player for them, who's out until the end of the season, they were still very good to just have the perfect performance to win a game that they had to win to make sure that they would be in Champions League next season.
Right. Although, given the way things have gone in Europe, City are guaranteed now to have five teams in the Champions League. So Bologna has sorted. Roma, who are fifth, actually facing a real challenge now from Atalanta and Lazio too in the race for top five. Atalanta, of course, are one of the reasons that they are going to have five Champions League teams and could even have six if they win the Europa League and a weird combination of other results. Could have six Serie A sides in Europe. For the moment, a quick reference, if we could, to the games coming up in the semi-finals there, is Atalanta face Marseille in the Europa League and Roma take on Bayern for the second year in a row. Rafa, this time, will it be different?
Well, it's not Jose, so I think Roma's football is going to look very, very different to those two games. Some of the worst 90 minutes of football I've ever seen in terms of entertainment value and ball and play value, I think, as well. And the way Leverkusen are going, I mean, why wouldn't they be strong contenders to make it to the final and beyond? They have this durability that we talked about. They have a lot of different ways of scoring goals. Last year, ultimately, in those semi-finals, came up a little bit blunt. They didn't have a lot of options. Azmoun was playing for them. Now he's playing for the other side. I think Leverkusen have been able to add players that have taken them to another level, like Boniface, Grimaldo, we talked about. Frimpong has really come on. Nathan Teller is a factor now. I mean, Adli is further along in his development. So I think Leverkusen should really do it.
Okay. Meanwhile, Marseille, getting past Benfica on penalties, and Atalanta is their reward. Jules.
Yeah, which is tough, obviously, but we knew before. With the full draw, incredible night at the Velodrome because Paulo Lopez, the Marseille goalkeeper, is not good on penalties, he says it himself. I think I looked before the shootout, he'd only saved one of the last 22 or something like that. Yeah, it was terrible. And he said after the game, he said, to be fair, I don't deserve any credit because we talked before the shootout with the second goalkeeper, Blanco, and the goalkeeping coach. And he said, like, I'm not just going to follow the advice or where they've shot before and where Di Maria. I'm just going to go with my instincts. And he said, it's pure luck. He said, don't give me credit because it's pure luck.
How many did he get?
So, yeah, he saves one, they missed one. And Angel Di Maria, who, with PSG, when he brought PSG, broke the heart of so many Marseille fans, especially at the Velodrome, by scoring, missed his penalty.
All right. Atalanta also have the Italian Cup coming up this week, second leg of their semi-final. They're a goal down against Fiorentina as they host the Viola in Bergamo. The other side of that draw is Lazio against Juventus. Juve 2-0 up from the first leg. And the other thing to mention is that the game that was suspended, Udinese-Roma, last week, the final 18 minutes of that is going to be played this week. And Udinese have a new manager for the occasion.
That's right.
Step forward, Fabio Cannavaro. That's an interesting choice.
That should not be allowed. You know, I mean, before talking about Cannavaro,
right,
this should not be allowed. You cannot have... So the team sheet is the same as the first game, right? You can't have a new manager in that game, on the final minutes of that second game. It's just not possible. You would not allow the player that didn't play in the first game that was not on that team sheet to be able to come on, right?
Right.
It's the same for a manager. So at that, Cannavaro would be on the bench. I don't think he should be allowed. I don't think he would be allowed to be on the bench.
Fair enough, Jules. Fair enough.
I don't know why I feel so passionately about it.
No,
but
I mean,
like,
because you care. I respect that. Good. That's enough Serie A and Serie A related talk. Because next up, we're going to hear from our friend Alvaro Romeo on Spain.
Hello, everyone. It's Ian Stone, host of Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Well, we're in the home straight of the season, so to keep up with all the goings-on during the run-in, join me, Amy Lawrence, James McNicholas, Adrian Clarke and Art De Roche twice a week as we chart what we all hope will be a memorable end to the campaign. Listen for free wherever you usually get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Brain en apertura, manda derecha, la pone para Lucas Vázquez, José lo quiere mocar, Bellingham remata, gol, 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 gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol,
gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, gol, for Real Madrid. They did Man City in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Then they did Barca too, their two biggest rivals in a row.
It's been a sensational week for Real Madrid. They have shown again that they have this competitive edge that is second to none in Spain and maybe in Europe too. This week they qualified for the Champions League semi-finals. At Real Madrid camp, there is a feeling that they have probably tackled the most difficult opponent of the season by beating Manchester City in the Champions League quarterfinals. It's not that they think that Bayern is an easy side to beat, but they have done it over the last 4 or 5 years a couple of times. So the camp is optimistic. Real Madrid knows that they are in a good place. And they can prepare now the Champions League pretty much individually because they are 11 points away from Barcelona in La Liga. They top the table. They got a favorable head-to-head against Barcelona. They are going to win La Liga for sure because there are only 18 points at stake. And it's done for them. Real Madrid will clinch La Liga trophy and they are in the Champions League semifinals, which is where they want to be.
Absolutely. Well, a 3-2 victory in the Clásico once again. Jude Bellingham with a stoppage time winner. How close was it, though?
I think that it was close. I think that Barcelona did a good game. The second half of Barcelona wasn't disappointing at all. But Real Madrid was capable of profiting the moments. I think that Barcelona got the advantage twice, but never let it sink, in the sense that Real Madrid responded very quickly, scoring the equalizer. So Barcelona was never too comfortable with the lead. And I think that like in October when Gavi was the best player around, but Bellingham won the game for Real Madrid, this time maybe some other players like Lucas Vázquez or Lamine Yamal were the outstanding footballers of the game, but the Englishman won El Clásico again. I mean, it's incredible. Jude Bellingham has scored 17 goals in La Liga and his presence is really authoritative in the games, because even when he doesn't play too good, you know that he's there, you know that you can give him the ball, and you know as well that he can turn up in the big moments. He's not only impositive physically, but his personality, I think that makes him the kind of player that you want to have in the last minutes of the game to win it.
Mm. Well, he was careful to make sure that Lucas Vázquez got some praise afterwards, tweeting, "Lucas Vázquez, you f***ing legend."
Yeah, and it's very true. I mean, Lucas Vázquez is one of those long-time Real Madrid, I don't know if the word would be servants, that they have excelled every expectation. Because let's face it, I mean, how much would it be to get yourself a player like Lucas Vázquez and, in the same way, Nacho? How much would you pay for a player that he has to be available basically for 15 or 20 games per season, because they won't always play, but they are always fit and they never complain and they are always ready for the challenge. And in the case of Lucas Vázquez, his big week has been amazing. I mean, he stepped up against Manchester City in the penalty shootout, taking a penalty, and against Barcelona, he made a penalty happen, just getting the ball out of Cancelo, who had a terrible game again for the second time in a row. And then he scored one of the goals of Real Madrid in the second post, just getting the best of Cancelo again. I think that Lucas Vázquez was one of the winners of this game. His contract runs out now in 2024, in the same way that Nacho's contract runs out now in June. And I think Real Madrid should consider extending their contract, really, because it will be very difficult for them to find players who are always ready to play and who are always fit despite not playing every single minute.
Mm, fair enough. So the Madrid papers Monday morning going with kind of predictable Campeón and Campeón Virtual headlines. The papers from Catalonia, meanwhile, with things like Era Gol and Un Gol Fantasma. Tell us about how that all came about.
Well, Gol Fantasma, probably our English audience can understand that it means ghost goal. The thing is that when the scoreline was 1-0, Lamine Yamal took a corner, and the ball could or could not cross the line. We don't know about that. It was about to be a goal olímpico, almost. But the thing is that La Liga doesn't have a goal line technology, because they don't want to.
No goal line technology. Why?
No, because Javier Tebas doesn't want to. And Javier Tebas has said in previous interviews that it's too much of an investment for a thing that happens very rarely, which is a little bit of a joke, really, because, for example, this week alone, it has happened twice. It happened in the Getafe Real Sociedad game, and it happened in El Clásico as well. The best thing, in my opinion, is that the whole world show that La Liga doesn't have the goal line technology, because it's a little bit of an embarrassment, really. And I know that the clubs have to validate as well implementing it or not, but at the end of the day, it's La Liga's approach, and La Liga doesn't want it. And probably the most infuriating thing of all was the fact that during the game, when Twitter erupted with people wondering why La Liga didn't have the goal line technology, and Barcelona fans were complaining about it because they thought that the ball had crossed the line, Javier Tebas tweeted a few screenshots from previous mistakes that the goal line technology had done in the past, which is like a little bit stupid, really. I would say, I'm not calling him stupid or anything like that, but the action, in my opinion, is very childish. La Liga's president shouldn't be doing this kind of thing. And what is he promoting anyway? The fact that La Liga doesn't have this is ridiculous. I remember that the Premier League in the 2018-2019 season was pretty much decided for 1.13 centimeters, something that the VAR cameras would have never spotted, but the goal line technology did.
Yeah, indeed. Was this one in the Clásico over the line, do you think, Alvaro?
I don't know, really. I cannot tell you, Jimbo. It was very difficult to see. Not enough camera angles, but I tell you who has the doubts about that. Joan Laporta. Joan Laporta, Barcelona president, today has asked to the Spanish FA and to La Liga for all the video footage from that action so Barcelona can consider what to do next. But if Barcelona considers that the ball crossed the line, they will ask for a repetition of the game. This is official. Joan Laporta has uploaded a video to Barcelona's Twitter account. asking for this, which I consider, to be honest with you, not necessary. I think that Barcelona shouldn't be doing these things. The game will never be repeated, and I have the feeling that Joan Laporta, more and more, he's starting to be the president of the probably most motivated and ultra fan base around, rather than being the president of a team that needs a president who acts under reason and acts under, you know, with a level-headed approach.
Okay. It has been a frustrating week for the Catalans. In contrast to Real Madrid, on Tuesday, well, first of all, their supporters actually attacked their own team bus by accident with stones on the way to the clash with Paris Saint-Germain at Montjuic. They then blew up against Paris Saint-Germain, crashed out of the Champions League, and now against their eternal rivals, Real Madrid. Amongst all of that, some talk that Xavi may stay.
Yeah, you know, because after losing against Villarreal at the end of January, beginning of February, I cannot remember now, he said that he was leaving in the heat of the moment. Mm. And then every time that he's been asked again whether he leaves or not, he doesn't give a clear answer. He doesn't say, I'm leaving, full stop, period. And, you know, little by little, the rumor is that Xavi may be considering his stay. And there are things that favor this, or there are conditioning factors that favor Xavi's stay. One of them is that Barcelona doesn't have a lot of money to sign or appoint a new manager, because the plan B could be Rafa Márquez, who is the manager from the academy, the B side, and probably Xavi, in Laporta's side, is a better option than Rafa Márquez, that to start with. And then, because Xavi still believes that he can turn the situation around and make Barcelona a better side, if he gets the right footballers. But the truth is that I don't think it's serious that Barcelona is dependent on the decision of their manager to know where to go. I think that Barcelona should be the one, the club, or the president Laporta, should be the ones pulling the strings and making the decisions. But it's unquestionable that Barcelona had a very disappointing week. They won't play in the Club World Cup in 2025, which is 50 million less for Barcelona. It's safe to say now that this is a trophy-less season for them. And I think that the approach of Barcelona lately has been really bad in terms of the way they have angled and faced the defeats. Barcelona has to change that approach. I mean, so far, whatever bad negative result has been blamed on external factors, as Xavi did again yesterday, talking about the referee in El Clásico. And I think for the good of the team, I hope that Xavi's approach remains just public, that he talks different stuff in the locker room, but not about referees or antagonistic press. Laporta's quotes today don't help either. And, you know, sometimes Real Madrid and Barcelona are good or bad depending on how the other one is. Real Madrid is in a really good moment because they have worked on that very well, and Barcelona is in a very bad moment. But Barcelona is in a very bad moment irrespective of Real Madrid. They are carving out their own luck these days. Financially, they are broke, and the best thing for them is La Masia. And hopefully Barcelona will realize sooner than later that it's the youngsters, probably, the players that they should be more proud of. And
I believe that children are the future, Alvaro. Listen, I just want to get a quick word about a little bit further down. You told us about Girona in third place, but only 2 points behind Barcelona. They are now qualified for Europe. But the battle for fourth spot, the final Champions League spot, is wide open again, because there's only 3 points between Atletico Madrid and Athletic Club. And they face each other next weekend at the Civitas Metropolitana. Athletic only getting the draw with Granada this weekend. Meanwhile, Atleti, who also got knocked out of the Champions League last week at the hands of Borussia Dortmund, followed that defeat up with a loss at Alaves, featuring Diego Simeone's son, and also an amazing goal from Luis Rioja.
Yeah, Rioja is a very good footballer. His volley was excellent, just to wrap it up for Alaves. I think that Giuliano Simeone was very good. He forgot that he was playing, obviously, against his father's side, and he gave a very energetic performance. I think that the game the next week is going to be key to determine who is favorite to qualify for the Champions League. It will be played at Civitas Metropolitano, and I think that Athletic Club Bilbao this season has been really good against Atletico, to the point that they have beaten them 3 times already. Ooh. But this game is different. Both teams will have some time to rest. I think that Atletico is suffering from the fact that away from home, they have been awful. I mean, they got 18 points away this season out of 48 points. And the best players are not delivering lately. Griezmann, Morata, Koke, they look very tired. I spoke about this in the past as well, because they are rather an old squad. And when they play well, they are incapable of giving 90 proper good minutes. And maybe Athletic Club Bilbao can capitalize on that. But we have to say as well that since they won the Spanish Cup, Athletic Club Bilbao hasn't won a game. They drew two at home.
True enough. All right, well, I look forward to hearing what happens in that game when you join us next week, Alvaro.
Yeah, it will be a pleasure to be there.
Alvaro Romeo, kind of mad though. Did you know that the Liga didn't have goal line technology?
No, I just assumed they would have.
I remember very clearly when Tebas said, we don't need it.
That's bizarre though. Of all the tech, that's the one thing that does work. Why would you not have that and have everything else?
The least controversial of all the...
I think his point at the time, if I remember well, was like, well, actually, when do you need it? Because you could have the whole season where you don't need it. So why would we spend money on something that we actually might never need? Mm. And yet, in the biggest game of the season, when everybody, the whole world is watching, that's when it happens.
Well, it's like insurance, isn't it? I mean, you just have to pay it, right?
Yeah. Or vice presidents of the refereeing association. You never know if you're going to need them or not. But might as well pay them just in case.
Just in case.
Ooh. Here's some news from the Eredivisie. Bad news, and for once it doesn't concern Ajax. Vitesse Arnhem relegated from Netherlands' top division with an 18-point deduction. Yikes. What can you tell us about this?
Well, it's the link with Chelsea, isn't it? And Roman Abramovich, remember when all the Chelsea players used to go on loan to Vitesse, like Mason Mount and all of that? Well, actually, he felt like Vitesse were owned by Chelsea and Abramovich, which was not really the case, but was it the case?
Well, leaked documents now suggesting that they actually were bankrolled by Roman Abramovich during his time as Chelsea owner. He's now, of course, heavily sanctioned. And so Vitesse have been given an 18-point penalty.
Do you know how many points they had in the league so far?
They had 17. This is the thing. So the Dutch FA say that the unprecedented scale of the penalty was due to the exceptional seriousness and extent of violations by Vitesse of the Dutch football licensing system. But they were bottom of the table anyway.
Yeah.
So you could give them a 100-point penalty and it would make no difference.
Yeah, but you might have a similar case
I think
next year.
Oh, yeah, and fair. Do you need to have a tariff that is for next season, perhaps?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if they're minus one, maybe it carries over.
Maybe so. That'd be nice. Imagine if your points carried over. That'd be brilliant. Anyway, there you go. Vitesse Arnhem. They effed around and they found out. Next up, Bundesliga.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to The Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
All right, Raf. Dortmund were Bayer's latest hurdle this week, and it looked like they might finally be the team who beat them, etc., etc., etc. But yet again, Bayer found a way. Extraordinary stuff. We did talk about Bayer extensively, so let's move on to other things. For example, Bayern, the assumption by many that Julian Nagelsmann was going to be returning to that club to take over from Thomas Tuchel at the end of the season took a big hit when instead Nagelsmann extended his contract with the German national side. What does that mean for Bayern? What does that also mean for Jurgen Klopp, who some people thought was maybe going to be taking over there in the near future? Over to you, Raf.
Well, it came as a bit of a surprise because Bayern and him seem to be quite close in terms of negotiations. But depending on which side you believe, it fell through. So the Nagelsmann version is that he realized it's not a straightforward situation because there's still some people inside the club who perhaps aren't his greatest fans after he left a year ago or was fired a year ago. Some people in the dressing room, of course, didn't have a great relationship with him, as we know. But also, I think it would have created problems perhaps for the Euros, because every decision he makes, as far as the national team is concerned, whenever there's Bayern Munich players involved, people will read into it, what does that mean for this guy from next season? If he leaves out Goretzka, let's say, for the national team, does that mean Goretzka's days are numbered? I think he would have almost sort of had to manage both teams at the same time. Mm. And I think he realized the problems of it, and he also realized that the German FA really pushed hard. Him and Rudi Völler have a great relationship. We saw in the last two games that things are moving in the right direction, and probably thought this is the sort of the more low risk option rather than returning to Bayern.
So what do Bayern do now?
Well, I don't know.
Jules, any thoughts?
I just thought, like, I mean, we know the short list dish.
I mean,
De Zerbi is on.
Okay.
I think Sebastian Hoeneß, considering his links to the club and his uncle and the great season he's having at Stuttgart, if he extended his deal. And then obviously Ralf Rangnick, who for me would be my favourite. I would love to see him there at Bayern in a big club, even if it's just a stopgap for 1 year until maybe Klopp is keen to come back to
Rangnick
management.
Rangnick has done amazingly with the Austrian national
Very
side.
Very good, yeah. We'll play against France.
But
in
his
Euros.
Last club experience was at Manchester United, so mitigating circumstances. Raf, in England, the impression of Ralf Rangnick is deeply coloured by that whole experience. Does his reputation, did it in any way take a hit in Germany from that?
Not really. I mean, of course, it wasn't a success. No one is going to pretend otherwise. But I think they realised that United have had a habit of making good managers look pretty bad in recent years. And people, as is often the case with other managers, I think they tend to be a bit more forgiving in Germany, where they look at your work before and think, okay, it's not because the latest job was bad that you're suddenly no longer an option. You see managers coming back all the time who've been unsuccessful at Club A, and then Club B thinks, you know what, our setup is very different. Mm. We like the guy, and he gets another chance. And the fact that Bayern are...
The fact that they were even talking to Nagelsmann, who had previously been fired by Bayern.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. And Bayern have brought back Heinkes, who wasn't a success, an unmitigated success at Bayern either. So it's kind of normal, shall we say, for Germany.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing some concrete news on that. But Jürgen Klopp, Rav.
Yeah, Jürgen Klopp's really interesting because a lot of people, and I would include myself in that, thought that it's all sort of set up for him to come back to Germany and take over the national team from maybe March 2025, which is when the qualifiers for the World Cup start. The German FA had an agreement with Nagelsmann. He was only going to do the Euros and then we'll see what happens. I think Nagelsmann would have not been interested to just continue until the Nations League is over. So they would have had to make a decision. And I think part of the reasons why they didn't give him a longer contract to begin with was because they were hoping that Klopp, 9 months later, after Liverpool, might be persuaded to come in. I think the reason or the fact that they pushed so hard for Nagelsmann also suggests that they didn't think Klopp was either viable or a certainty for 2025. And now I think the Klopp story is not going to go away, but all it does is it's going to delay it a little bit. And we're going to think about him maybe coming back in time for the Euros in England. So that's not a bad...
Unless he gets moved up by some big club in the meantime.
Of course.
My prediction, Rangnick comes from a season at Bayern, and then in the summer 2025, Klopp arrives at Bayern.
At Bayern.
Yeah.
Wow, that's huge.
Klopp and Bayern are made to work with each other at some point, to work together.
A lot of people don't think so in Germany. Really? They think that Klopp being so sort of Borussia Dortmund, that'll be really strange for him.
No,
and
a long time ago.
Yeah, I agree.
And for Zidane, by the way, his name was mentioned. I think he's a profile that would interest Bayern, but there's been no contact. No contact.
Nothing, all right. Bayern, in the meantime, with a big win this weekend, dispatching Union Berlin 5-1, with Harry Kane scoring his 40th goal of the season. Lovely free kick from Harry. Possibly the nicer thing was Thomas Müller getting a brace in his 400th Bundesliga start.
Yeah, first time he'd scored on match day 30. He was confronted by that stat afterwards and he laughed because the commentator had said, "I've got a really funny stat for you." And he braced himself for something really exciting. And then he found it hard to hide his slight disappointment that was the only stat. But he also admitted that he hadn't played well, which is actually true. He didn't have a great game.
Mm.
Lots of misplaced passes, but he scored two very fine goals. And Union was shockingly bad. I mean, a team that was ripping up the league a few months ago in the Champions League, and now they look like a team that's going to go down. They had nothing. They had three people pressing. The other seven were sitting in front of the box and 60 meters in between.
It was ridiculous.
It was really disjointed.
Bayern, who a few weeks ago were looking in total disarray, are now comfortable in second and in the semi-finals of the Champions League against their old friends Real Madrid, who they don't have a good record against, Raf.
Not recently. I think the last time they went through in a knockout was when Van Bommel that was there and did the famous thingy gesture.
Yeah, the umbrella gesture.
Is it an umbrella?
As in Italy they call it that, yeah.
I think there's a different name in Spanish,
less
prosaic. Anyway, Bayern are funny because they've been good in the Champions League, weren't 100% convincing against Arsenal over the two legs, but got the job done.
Yeah.
Showed a little bit of experience.
Yeah, it was key.
Their big players turned up. And they're thinking, you know, this Real Madrid team, of course it's Real Madrid and they always find a way and so on, but there isn't that sense of we're total underdogs. I think they had a lot more, trepidation going into the Arsenal game than they have about facing Real Madrid in the semis.
Does that sound right to you, Jules?
Yeah, because Arsenal were on... Went great form and were the best team in England at that moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're the best team in the Premier League, by definition, you're very, very good. I think with this Real Madrid team, they are, of course, an incredible team as well. But they always give you the feeling, at least, that you can beat them. Maybe that's their trick.
Ha! Very good. One other thing to mention, Dortmund, who had that draw with Bayer Leverkusen this weekend, unlikely to catch Leipzig now in fourth place because Leipzig are on a real tear. But it doesn't matter because equally, Bundesliga is pretty much guaranteed now, almost having five teams in the Champions League next season.
It's looking very good. It's looking very good. I think they need to pick up a couple of points and that should do it, which before the quarterfinals looked very unlikely. I think England were huge favourites to get that that extra spot. There's also a very unlikely scenario that would see six teams from the Bundesliga make it into the Champions League. So that is if Dortmund win qualify through their league position.
Right, so you could have six Italians and six
No, five Italians.
No, but you could have six Italians. Well, if Atalanta win the Europa League...
That's right.
And don't finish... I think they have to finish seventh. Why? Yeah. I have no idea. Do you know what? Let's park all of this and just see how it plays out.
But it's...
It's good harvesting, my fellow farmers.
It's a nice change after a lot of doom and gloom in recent months. You remember the thing about the investment that didn't investment deal that didn't go through, and the national team being in crisis, and Bayern looked like they're not going anywhere. Dortmund really inconsistent, but somehow it's worked out. I think because it's a knockout competition, I'd be very cautious to proclaim German football is back. Like culture was back last year. And to be fair to our friend James, he always pushed back against that suggestion Serie A is the best team in the world and is the best league in the world.
Mm.
And I don't think anyone is going to make that point. Unlike 2013, when we actually had two German teams in the final, and there was a sense that at least in those two teams, they're sort of ahead of the curve and are really setting trends in the way they're playing with Dortmund and Klopp and Heinkes being influenced by him and Pep was coming in. There was a real kind of sense of Bundesliga is coming, is up and coming. I don't think it's quite the same this year.
Mm. But even though you could get that enjoyable final again at Wembley.
Yeah. Same one. You know, there's a tiny chance that if PSG win all their game and Marseille all their game, that we get that extra spot.
Oh, you would
still can,
You could still take the extra spot from Germany.
Yeah.
Jules.
I know. It won't happen.
because they won't win all their games.
But, all right. Wow. Speaking of Ralf's returning to the Bundesliga, Ralf, that man Hasenhüttl got his first victory since joining Wolfsburg.
Yeah, wind power, James.
Wind power.
Yeah, because Jonas nice. Wind scored the winner.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was waiting for that for the in the opening intro.
No, I missed that.
yeah. Anyway, good win for him.
Yeah.
After that 3-0 defeat at Leipzig last week, which was not a great way to start your second Bundesliga career, because of course he was there before, or third if we count Ingolstadt. But yeah, I mean, Wolfsburg, in terms of the money that they spend, probably the most underachieving team in the Bundesliga, perhaps even in some sections of Europe, because they have huge backing, Volkswagen, etc. They were in the Champions League a couple of years ago, but this year they're going nowhere. And until Kovac got fired, there was even a small chance that it might get sucked into the relegation battle. Now they have a bit of a gap, but still only 4 points.
Oof. Tense.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Jules, saved Liga for last. Just to keep you, listener, hanging on for your hit of French football news. Paris Saint-Germain moving a step closer to their title, which I think you can wrap up next weekend. Is that right?
On Wednesday, even.
On Wednesday.
Yeah, the game in hand. If they beat Lorient away and Monaco don't win against Lille at the Stade Louis II in that
cauldron.
Yeah.
Wow.
Then PSG will be champion.
So PSG this weekend met the form team in Ligue 1, Lyon, who you were telling us about last week, and absolutely creamed them with one Kylian Mbappe sat on the bench looking pretty glum. 4-0 up by half-time.
Incredible start of the game. To be fair to PSG, PSG were outstanding from especially that first half. Then they controlled the second half. The first half was great, even with Dembele and Mbappe on the bench and a few more players rested, like Nuno Mendes, for example. They were just great. Barcola against his former team was fantastic on the left-hand side. Hakimi on the right. Gonzalo Ramos scored two more goals. He's been great in 2024. On the other hand, Lyon and their manager, Pierre Sage, stone-wise, just got it wrong. It can happen. He went for a very ambitious tactic and formation with a 4-2-3-1, and they just got opened up badly, which can happen. They will face each other in the French Cup final on May 25th in Lille. So there's a lot of things that they can work on for that scenario not to happen again. But they just stone-wise got it wrong. And Luis Enrique and his team at the moment just can do nothing wrong.
He's Luis Enrique again now. He's not the Spanish guy.
No, he's Luis Enrique. I love
he's
him
back
again.
To that. Okay.
I
love him.
And also,
best
I saw
manager
him,
ever.
Best manager ever, Raf. I saw him after the Barca win, him and one of his guys.
Yeah.
They gave me a big hug. So I was I love you again. I love you again.
That's so nice. He was in a very ebullient mood after that game. He was full of smiles for all and sundry.
Yeah, because I think the fact that he was Barcelona as well. And even if the red card is the turning point, obviously, of the game, it must have felt good for him to go and I don't know, win 4-1. It's pretty incredible. And again, PSG had never come back from a tie where they lost the first leg at home. So.
Yeah, and they must be heavy favourites against Dortmund, no? After beating them and drawing in the group of death.
Yeah, favourites. Because it would be very PSG-esque to really bottling up now.
Dortmund gave him a hard time at the Signal Iduna Park.
I remember Jules getting very upset at the number of chances that Barcola missed that night.
That was the Newcastle game. But yeah, the first leg.
Okay, but also there were a lot of missed chances for PSG.
Yeah, they were in control in at the Parc des Princes.
Yeah.
But then Raf is right. They really struggled. And Zaire Emery bailed them out in the second leg where the qualification was on the line even.
Right.
For all four teams. So, because in the meantime, remember Milan went to Newcastle and won. But there was a time where PSG were out because they were going down at Dortmund.
True.
And Zaire Emery saved them really that night. So the fact that the second leg is in Paris is obviously an advantage, I think. But yeah, that first leg in Dortmund, where Raf and I will be next week, will be super interesting.
Excellent. Monaco have gone second. They beat Brest this weekend.
Huge win. Huge win for Adi Hutter as well.
Yeah.
Not maybe as flamboyant as they have been at times this season because they've been really good, but very solid. Zakaria scored a great goal. And that fight for second, third, fourth with Lille and Brest. Brest can lose everything, really. There's big games coming up. There's Monaco-Lille, we mentioned. There's a Lille-Brest coming up as well. So it'd be fun to watch.
Brilliant. Okay. to lose Marseille was the other game I was going to mention, but we kind of did that already, the draw.
Yeah, the other one really is the derby of Brittany between Nantes and Rennes, and Nantes losing their 9 home games in a row. Losing their 9th home game in a row in the league and being battered by Rennes 3-0. So not great for Comboiré and Nantes.
Indeed not. Excellent. All right, Jules, let's have Ligue 1 first in the running order next.
If you want.
Next week, we're going to be recording on Monday because, of course, it's a European week. We've got the semi-finals coming up. So, listen, do make sure you join us for that, up extra early for you. For today, many, many thanks to London-bound James Horncastle, Alvaro Romeo from his mystery location, Jules, of course, here, and Rafa, who actually turned up, and Rachel and Charlie in the booth. And you, listener, have a great time. We'll catch up with you soon on The Totally Football Show.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.